A podcast of the cinema.
Who are you?
I'm Alonzo Duralde.
Who am I?
You're Dave White.
What's our dang deal?
We are film critics who are married to each other.
What else about you? That's all there is to know about
you. I'm the film reviews editor at The Wrap. I'm co-host of the Breakfast All Day, Who Shot Ya, and a Film and a Movie podcast. If I may, real quick, about a film and a movie.
You may.
Very exciting. Our current episode, we're talking to Mark Harris, author of the new biography, Mike Nichols, A Life. And we do two Mike Nichols classics, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Closer. And then later this week, friend of the pod, Kurt Holman, who's been on the show before and who co-hosts the Comics Canon every week. He joins Daniel and me to talk about the original 1954 Gojira and the 2016 Shin Godzilla.
Why didn't y'all do Hedorah? Which is the best?
Well, because it. What would you pair it with?
Todd Haynes's Dark Waters.
There you go. We should still do that. I like it. Eco horror.
The Godzilla versus Hedorah, which at the time when I was a child was known as
Godzilla versus the Smog Monster,
which is the American title.
Yes.
It taught me all about the ecology, all about the pollution.
Yes. Save the Earth.
The song, there's the go-go dancing to the song about the ecology. Seared into my consciousness.
What if we paired Destroy All Monsters with Avengers Endgame?
Destroy All Monsters is actually the best.
Yes.
Hedorah is, Smog Monster is second best.
Because in both cases, it's like, how do you have a franchise with all these characters?
Yeah.
And how are you going to put them in one movie?
One movie.
And fight aliens?
Yeah. Destroy All Monsters is better than Avengers Endgame, honestly. I can watch Destroy All Monsters any old time. Avengers Endgame is such an investment.
It's
requires that I remember too much
right.
of what came before.
It's kind of it's a little potato potato for me. I'd have a hard time picking which one.
I don't care about potatoes.
I think they both do what they set out to do, and they both pull off a degree of difficulty in terms of just sheer character
numbers. Monsters
is
the jam.
Well, yes.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Everyone knows this.
Yes. Yeah.
We have three films to discuss today.
Yes.
One of them, well, here they are. French Exit. Supernova. And Nomadland.
Yikes.
Which one?
I mean, I like all these movies to some degree or other, but whoa.
Let's start with Nomadland.
Okay.
Because something wild happened. The other day.
Yes.
I was on the balcony getting my daily vitamin D dose.
Yes.
And
I was in back.
I am not going out onto the street.
Oh no.
It's like playing Frogger out there. Too many people.
Yeah.
Nobody's wearing a mask. Not into it. You stay away from me. I'll go to the balcony, soak up that sun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like Cheryl Crow.
Me and Cheryl Crow. And, God, I hate that song. I sincerely hate that song.
It is the kind of song that plays in stores I don't want to be shopping in.
Oh, if you ever wanted to torment me, just play that record too many times. Once, fine. More than once, no. But I'd hate it even the first time.
Yeah.
I'm on the balcony, and... dude walks up to the door, holding a big wooden crate.
Yeah.
Like, and there's a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't know who you are or what this is about, but this is not the door. go run along. I don't know what you're doing.
I thought I had told you this was coming.
Stranger danger. No, you did not tell me this was coming at all.
Okay.
You knew?
Yes.
What did they tell you? When? Hang on.
Okay, we'll get there.
He says, Alonso? I said, no. I mean, he lives here. He is here. You were in the back.
Yeah.
And he goes, this is his concessions box for the film Nomadland. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And when he said concessions, I'm thinking, ooh, caramel corn, popcorn, candy, sodies, maybe an orange sody, maybe a grape one. That's my favorite, grape.
That's been a thing lately because studios can't have premieres or like receptions or whatever.
They'll
send you, Netflix has been doing it a lot. But this is the first time anybody else, I've gotten one from anybody else, but they basically will send you, you know, your own box of treats to enjoy at home when you either, you know, you're watching a virtual premiere or a virtual Q&A or something like that.
There was not one concession item in this box. This was a box of artisanal produce, fruit, and pastry. Breads.
Do you know what this was?
What?
Remember in Happiest Season, the Alison Brie character and her husband drop out of being lawyers so they can make fancy gift baskets for people?
Yeah.
That's what this was.
Yeah, it was insane. When I got it, when we got the box inside, because I told him, I was like, just set it down, go away. Thanks. Be gone. Go. Don't come near me. He was wearing a mask.
Yes.
He was
very nice.
He was respectful.
Yes.
And I was nice to him. I wasn't, you know, brusque. I started digging through this box. It's like full of turnips. Here, honey, gnaw on this raw turnip as a concession treat.
It actually would have made more sense, but there were no turnips or beets in this box.
All right, there were no turnips or beets. However, here's what there was.
Yes.
All right. There was a full loaf of really good bread.
Yeah.
The kind you have to slice yourself. That's how you know it's fancy. When you have to do the work and pay twice what you would pay for a normal loaf of bread, that's when you know you've got the good bread.
Mm-hmm.
A little mini loaf of banana bread. Not just any old mini loaf of banana bread, but one that had been decorated on top with like coffee cake streusel. How have I never thought about this in my whole life? I've made so many loaves of banana bread.
Where was the streusel?
Why didn't anyone tell me, you know, you could put coffee cake streusel on top of this banana bread and they will be very, very good. And it was. Strawberry jam.
Mm-hmm.
Trail mix.
Yep.
A bag of, like, almonds and cashews and walnuts and Brazilian hazelnuts and
Brazil
stuff.
Brazil nuts,
yeah. So that. Little cherry tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Cucumbers.
Yeah.
Fresh rosemary.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh mint that was actually sort of mangled and destroyed by the time I got here, but...
grapes.
Grapes. Dried apricots.
Cookies.
Cheese. Chocolate chip cookies. Like fancy cheese.
Yeah, like triple cream.
And then a fancy truffle salumi.
Right.
Beef
jerky.
Beef jerky.
Chocolate.
Like, you know, small batch chocolate.
Chunks of like really good semi-sweet chocolate.
Yeah. What else?
Those chips, those potato chips.
Potato chips. Good. Just a wacky amount of food. Like, in the words of Margie Rocklin, it seemed bottomless. And I was stunned. I'm happy to eat a lot of free food.
Sure.
Who wouldn't be? Already been done.
The weird thing
But
here,
then we watched the movie.
Yes.
Or rather, you had already seen the film once. I watched the movie for the first time, and I got to tell you that there is a very strange disconnect in my head between the fancy food in this box and the movie.
Like, you would think we were about to watch a film about millionaires having a picnic.
Yes.
Like, and maybe it was just like, well, we don't want to send everybody, like, you know, a bag of Cheez-Its from a vending machine at a truck stop, because this is a movie about, like, people traveling around living nomadically, as they describe it, and, you know,
it's heating up canned food in their vans on little hot plates.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, I watched what people were eating in the food in the film, and I thought, I didn't see no
trail mix.
Dried apricots.
Three chocolate chip cookies
in a glass jar. Yeah, like, what's going on?
Sometimes the premier food isn't always necessarily thematic, I guess.
I guess. Yeah, the only time we ever had thematically appropriate food at a premiere was there was a Disney movie that the premiere was in the afternoon. I can't even remember which one this was. But they served, like, Uncrustables after.
Yeah, no, they'll serve kid-friendly, like, little mini corn dogs. Is that
little,
for the
little chicken
kid
fingers
movies?
And stuff.
No,
little corn dogs.
You didn't go with me to the Chocolat.
Oh, that's what I was fixing to say next. I made sure
terrible movie, but
you stole lots of chocolates.
I brought some home for you.
In your pocket. You put chocolate in your pocket, and you brought it home to me.
Well, in a box.
Which means that you love me.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Chocolat premiere was catered by Godiva.
Sure.
So it's like,
as it should have
this
been.
Movie was dumb, but boy, were those chocolates great.
Yeah. And I got some. I didn't even go.
Like, even the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory premiere didn't have.
Did you go to
chocolate.
That?
Yeah. Well, not the premiere. I went to the press screening. They gave us, like, nerds afterwards or something. We're like, this is, no, not this. Chocolate, please.
They gave us blue frosted cookies at Judy Moody and the Nut Bummer Summer.
That's right.
That was good.
I forgot about that. Like, those big,
I can't remember
supermarket
about,
sugar cookies. I
can't remember a thing about these films. But I'll remember what you gave me to eat.
It's like Maya Angelou always says, people may not remember what you did, but they remembered what you served.
That's
them.
Right. That's right. So the
anyway, Nomadland.
Yes. Why don't you talk about it?
Okay. So Frances McDormand stars as Fern. This is a book. This is based on a nonfiction book about people who you know, live out of RVs or vans and travel.
2017, also called Nomadland.
Yes, travel around the country to, you know, like, where the work is. So the character played by Frances McDormand, we first meet, it is close to Christmas time. Amazon hires seasonal help. This is a real thing. They have a thing called Camper Force, where they will basically buy your slot at an RV park, and then you come in and help out during the Christmas rush on the lines where they're packing boxes and stuff.
Right.
We find out that Fern had lived in a town in Nevada with her husband. Her husband died. U.S. Gypsum, which basically owned the town,
right,
closed the factory, and so everything disappeared.
The town stopped existing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, the zip code went away.
Yeah.
And over the course of the film, we see people from Fern's past who offer her a place to stay if she needs it, and she says no. She meets new friends who sometimes will offer her a place to stay, and she says no. She prefers to be in the van. You know, she drives. She goes to the Badlands. She goes to, I forget where the beet harvest takes place. And so, you know, so over the course of the year, we sort of see her subsisting. She becomes part of this thing called the Rubber Tramp Rodeo,
I think. There's have to go look that
a
up.
Lot of the people in the film who you know, are playing themselves or versions of themselves. These are people who were some of them were featured in the book, and others, like this guy Bob, I don't want to say it wrong, is it Bob Wells?
Rubber Tramp Rendezvous.
Rubber
I'm sorry,
Tramp Rendezvous.
I did just go look that
yes.
up.
And this guy Bob Wells, who has a very popular YouTube channel where he basically talks about living on the road, living nomadically, you know, being off the grid.
Yeah, it's Bob Wells.
Bob Wells.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a year in the life of this woman and how she gets by and where she goes and what she does and how she makes a life for herself in a non-traditional way, which is nonetheless a way that a lot of people are doing in, you know, early 21st century America.
I would like to talk about the filmmaking before we talk about the stuff of this.
Chloe Zhao's third film.
Yes. And she is a filmmaker who is, up to now, primarily concerned with the American West.
Yes.
Her first film was about Native Americans. The second film was about a rising rodeo star, who's also Lakota Sioux, named Brady Gendreau. And he plays a version of himself.
Yes, much like film. Some of the people here do.
And but an injury sidelines him, and you know, and very much like this film, something bad has happened to the main person of the film, and the rest of the film is how will they adapt to life. Chloe Zhao's filmmaking style is very naturalistic. There are no big moments. It's as close to being like life as you can get without, you know, not being a movie at all. So I appreciate that about her. I like what she does a lot. And I like this film, how it looks, how it moves. I like the low level, you know, moments that take place. Love Frances McDormand as this character. I can't think of another actor her age who would be right for this.
Interesting. I don't know.
She has sort of staked out. I mean, I could probably, if someone wanted to come up with like three names off the top of their head, because it probably are, well, they listen, and I'm not, because I don't have anything in my head most of the time.
I mean, like somebody like Ann Dowd, maybe, you know.
Maybe Ann Dowd, yeah. Frances McDormand is so low-key and has this quality of, you know, unassuming normalcy. You don't think of her as a movie star.
Right.
She is, but you don't think of her as that.
Yeah.
Because she chooses work that doesn't, you know, sparkle her up.
Oh, well, yeah, no.
And so when you see her in this film, you know, defecating in a bucket in her van, you think, that's the Frances McDormand I know and love.
Frances Jean Jacket to the Oscars McDormand.
And it and the world of this food box that we got is so far removed from what you're watching in the film.
Yes.
This is about subsistence. This film is about barely getting by.
Yeah.
And so I've still got this cognitive dissonance going on in my head. Like, I'm eating, you know, small batch chips right now while watching a film about poverty.
Yeah. Well, I suspect the film will stay with you longer than the food box did, mentally speaking, anyway.
Maybe. Perhaps. I have problems with this movie. I don't know about you, but you tell me what you think, and then I'll.
I know what you're going to say, and I don't have those problems with it. It works for me. I mean, like, I liked it a lot more than I liked The Rider. That was a movie that I had some issues with.
Don't remember what they were, so I'm right.
Sure. Yeah, why not? this was a top 20 movie for me last year, but it wasn't a top 10 movie.
Right.
But I think it does what it does very well. The second time around, I really noticed the score more, which I thought was really quite lovely.
Yeah.
And actually was the same person who scored The Father, which we just watched.
Yes.
Strangely enough, a guy named Ludovico Einaudi.
Okay.
You know, yeah, I think that there's a concern where when you have an indie hit like The Rider was, and then your next movie stars Frances McDormand.
Right.
You know, that somehow you're not going to be able to maintain that balance.
Right.
But Frances McDormand disappears into this role as well as anybody else, whether the people who are playing themselves in the film or like David Strathairn or some other folks who are actual
as
actors.
Much as a first-timer would.
Yeah, I mean, really? Like, she's just, she is part of this landscape, you believe her, there's no, you know, not even that there's no glamour, there's just no affect to this role. She's,
right.
It's very, you know, gut-level work. I think the movie works. I think it's quite beautiful, and it is sad, but it's also, you know, there is something about people who are... You know, you can make the case that economically, we shouldn't be in a place where people have to live like this.
Correct.
But I think there's always been a certain American spirit of people who want to live something like this in terms of not being tied down, having the open road before them, being able to explore, having all that space. You
right.
know, like this often felt to me like the kind of movie that somebody from Europe makes when they make their first American film.
Yes.
You know, like when Wim Wenders made Paris, Texas.
Right.
They just love the space and the skies and the desert that just goes on beyond the point, you know, the horizon.
Well, that is a trademark already of Chloe Zhao's
yes.
filmmaking, in that people are teeny tiny little specks in this
right. landscape.
Huge expanse of United States land, yeah. right? So, and therefore, obviously, cinematography is always gorgeous.
Yes. and it's the same, Joshua James Richards, I think, was the same guy who
and
shot.
And he's her partner. As
oh,
well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. He's also the production designer in addition to being the cinematographer.
I see. So, yeah, it looks good. It's packaged beautifully, and you get the sense of, you know, humans in nature and their smallness. I didn't dislike the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about what I liked in a moment. But I have to talk about my problem with the movie,
okay.
which is, and I guess this wasn't the film she was trying to make, but it was the one I kept looking for.
Right.
The people who choose to do this with their lives are people who have some resources. Because, all right, it's based on a book. And in the book, there's a woman named Laura May.
Linda May.
Sorry, Linda May. Linda May is part of this Camper Force thing that Amazon does. Linda May is a real person.
Yeah.
And in the book, Linda May talks explicitly about the extreme difficulty of, you know, this lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not in the film, even though Linda May herself is in the film playing herself.
Okay. You don't think it's being shown and not told?
It is being shown, but no one talks about it. No one talks about the subsistence living life that this involves.
Mm-hmm.
The people who do this happily, voluntarily, you know, I'm in my golden years and I'm buying an RV. At one point in the film, they go to an RV park and they get into a really fancy one.
Yeah.
And they love it, and they all kind of like...
Fantasize about
being able to have that. But they're driving Ford Econoline vans around.
Right.
And fitting them out however they can, you know, in a very small way, to be able to live in that van like an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 6 by 6 foot apartment. The people who do this, hit the road in the fancy RV, they've got money. They just want to travel around and see their grandchildren. They've got retirement savings. They've got stuff. They've got safety nets, right?
And that's not who this movie's about.
Right. This film is populated by people who were really in the book.
Mm.
Many of whom, most of whom apparently, don't have a choice.
Right.
They were, you know, laid off at an older age, and no one would hire them again. They worked in rural areas and industries that disappeared. They lost their homes. This is all about the 2008 financial crisis and how it affected everyone who wasn't already rich. So, even though this Bob Wells dude in the movie is a real guy, and he advocates this sort of, you know, community of people who are on the road and taking care of each other in a very mutual aid sort of way. And I appreciate that. And if that's a choice that you make, cool. But lots of people are not making the choice. They are thrust into it and they're making the best of it that they can. Thank God there is a guy like Bob Wells out there who sort of helps organize people and points people to resources, or it would really be horrifying.
So
meanwhile, you have the fictional character of Frances McDormand here, who is shown over the course of the film to simply be working through grief. And when I say simply, I mean that's not a simple thing at all, but her economic reality is not exactly the same as what was detailed in the book that this film is based on, right? She is shown over the course of the movie to have options. She could stop anywhere she wanted to and be a substitute teacher and put down some new roots. She could go live with a character who's played by David Strathairn, who is super into her. She could go live with family. She could go live with his family. You know, she has options. She, when the Wendy and Lucy moment happens in this film and she's stuck with no money, It isn't a Wendy and Lucy moment. She just picks up the phone and calls her sister and says, I need money.
So are you mad that the movie isn't more about the economic realities that are forcing these people to make these choices, or that the central character is somebody who is not directly affected by them in terms of the fact that she has other options, but she doesn't take them because she's working through grief?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, in that I wanted one sentence from anybody about how, you know, grueling it is working at Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a film made before they introduced the $15 an hour minimum wage.
Well, that's been floating around for years, technically.
No, before they got it.
Oh, before Amazon workers get it now?
That's my understanding.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong. But my understanding is that they get $15 an hour now, don't they?
I don't know. All I know from Amazon lately is that people are trying to unionize.
They're trying to unionize, and they're trying to, and Amazon is trying to bust them.
Yes.
All right. So, and Amazon is the easy job that you get to see in this film. There's beet harvesting that they don't show you, but that is actually even more punishing.
Right.
Physical labor for people in their 50s, 60s, 70s. So, I understand that this film is not Ken Loach's Sorry We Missed You.
Right.
You want a harrowing movie about gig economy.
Yeah.
That's the one. And it has an angry, angry heart.
Yes.
And an angry, angry everything else. This film is not about any of this stuff.
Right.
That is simply the backdrop, but I kind of wanted someone in the film to say, you know, we are extremely poor.
Well,
you know, I mean, and yes, she shows you, but no one complains. No one's saying this sucks. Because you know what would happen if you were living on the road like that? You'd be like, this sucks. You would commiserate with other people about how much it sucks. But this film is about a woman who is grieving and who wants to be left alone and who only feels safe and secure
mm-hmm.
inside her van. At one point, she is even with her own family. Or Strathairn's family. And she has a bedroom to sleep in with a nice bed. And she gets up. She goes out to her van. Yeah. She wants to sleep in the van. So this is a story about something else entirely. That story, I really appreciate it. It's really moving. It's about loss and grief and trying to figure out what your next step is. Where you're going to go. Who will be with you, or do you simply really want to be solitary forever from now on?
So are you saying that Chloe Zhao shouldn't tell that story in the backdrop of this real-life thing that has major economic implications that aren't being discussed here in a direct fashion?
I'm saying I want everything that I don't get right now.
Okay.
I have mixed feelings about this film.
Okay.
It is a beautiful film about a real problem, you know, that this fictional character has. She has lost everything, and she's regrouping, and she's grieving, and she's traveling to see if she can find it. Not explicitly.
Right.
But it's all in her face and her actions and what this character does. The backdrop is the problem that I have. The problem that I have is this real-life backdrop, which mm-hmm. formed the basis of a book
right.
about the economic devastation facing so many people in the United States right now. And it's just a soft atmosphere in the back.
You do get the scene after the Amazon gig ends where she goes to the local employment office to see what opportunities there might be. And it's right. like, there aren't any.
There aren't any. And she hits the road.
Yeah. So I think, I don't know. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but it didn't bother me. It didn't. And okay, tell me this. Do you ever feel like that Chloe Zhao is soft pedaling or romanticizing the nomadic lifestyle? Not counting the fact that she doesn't directly go into the economic
a little bit.
Motor behind it.
Right now, that's how I feel. A little
really?
Bit. Yeah, a little bit.
And is because it because of the food box?
They all get... No, it's not because of the food box. It's because you see entire scenes of all the campers gathering together around a fireplace, like some old-timey Western, and they're singing Willie Nelson's On the Road Again with their own lyrics
mm-hmm.
that they've all agreed upon are the new lyrics to the song about how we're in our campers and we're going to Quartzsite, Arizona for the camper convention and everyone, we're all friends and we share things. And like, I don't know the lyrics of the song, but they all know it because they're all singing along. And I think to myself, well, y'all sure all seem to be having a really nice time. But that's not the truth.
Well, but I think that people in tough circumstances will go out of their way to put a
yes, you will.
Believe me, Americans, I think you especially, were taught to put a good face on things.
You make do and you buck up and you smile and
find that
keep
silver
going.
Lining and
put
you
one
know.
Foot in front of the other. Yeah, yeah, I know all about that. There are already too many films about this bootstrap kind of stuff.
Oh, this
and
is,
I'm done.
This is
that.
Not a movie about. This is a movie about people who are all having a hard time getting by. I don't think there's anything bootstrappy about it at all.
That's absolutely what it is. It is about people who are left alone to deal with their own thing and no one helping them, except for the communities that they build amongst themselves. This film is not a critique of the economic system we live in, and I'm irritated by that. On the other hand, it is a beautiful film about grief, and I'm not irritated by that.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I'm. This film taps into all of my anger about the world that the United. This film taps into all the anger I have about what the United States has become for everyone who isn't really, really well off.
No, that's fair. I think that you can tell stories in that milieu. And assume that audiences maybe already know or have already connected the dots as to why people are forced to live in a way that they do because of other circumstances without having to address those circumstances.
I understand that. But I think there's an emergency taking place in the United States right now, particularly mm-hmm. now. This, on top of all this nonsense, there's now a pandemic.
Sure.
And so it's even worse.
Yeah.
Than it was, because employment during the pandemic is even harder to find.
Yeah.
You know? So.
And housing.
And housing. So I am full of rage and eating artisanal chips while watching a movie that is, on the one hand, quiet and sensitive and real and touching, and simultaneously enraging because it isn't even once speaking a direct sentence about how effed up everything is right now. And how everyone in the movie, with the exception of the fictional people, all the real people, getting back to Linda May, even she wants to stop doing it. She says so in the film.
Yes.
And in the book. She wants to go build her Earthship home in Arizona.
Yeah.
And out of recyclable materials. Like, she wants to stop driving around. Having said all of this, just the anxiety of that would drive me out of my mind.
Well, yeah, I know it's not.
I need a kitchen and a chair and a.
It is not a lifestyle you would ever embrace.
I might have no choice, right? You might not have any choice either. Mm. Anybody out there, everything bad can happen to you.
Yeah. Yeah. There is no safety net. But I think that that's inherent in the storytelling.
Yeah.
But okay, I hear you.
Maybe I'm just too under-distanced from it. You know, if you've been poor in your life and you see a movie where people are poor, you want it to be real. You want there to be some poor person saying, hey, guess what? We're poor. This is garbage. Let's burn things down. Let's go rob that bank. Like, that's what I think.
Do people who become impoverished at a older than you are right now?
Yeah, thank God. Like, my poverty was in childhood, not in adulthood. Like, I'm fine right now. But you know, when that happens to you as a kid, it stays with you, and you look, when you see it in the world, you think, "Don't sugarcoat this." And there was a little sugar in this movie.
Okay.
Yeah,
fair enough. There is an ad we have.
Is there?
There is. Our friends at Film Movement Plus.
Film Movement Plus, lovely streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
Foreign language films, little micro independent films.
Classics.
Documentaries. Classics.
Yeah. What Martin Scorsese would call curated.
Correct. They didn't send us any ad copy, so let's just wing it.
Yeah, why not?
You know what they got? They got this cool movie called Le Choc du Futur.
Ooh.
That means the shock of the future in French.
I would have guessed that, but okay.
It's set in Paris in 1978 about a young woman who decides to use electronic machines to make music.
Oh, they got your number.
Oh, totally, totally. Like, you know, is it... Letitia from Stereolab? Let's find out.
also, they have, from the premiere to the Toronto, or screen to the Toronto Film Festival, Electric Shadows from Chinese female director Xiao Zhang, which has been called a love poem to Chinese cinema. It's about a small town cinema and the lifelong influence it has on a young boy and girl. And the two meet again years later under unusual circumstances in Beijing, an encounter that sparks both nostalgia and romance. And speaking of nostalgia and romance, they also have a vintage Ernst Lubitsch romantic comedy.
That's always a good thing.
Yes, that Lubitsch touch. That Uncertain Feeling, starring Merle Oberon and Melvin Douglas and young, hot Burgess Meredith.
Was he young, hot?
Yeah. Did you ever see the original of Mice and Men?
I don't know.
He's George.
I don't think I did.
Oh, yeah. No, the Burgess Meredith had a Dewey period.
I saw the one with Gary Sinise.
That's a different one.
All right.
That's the Pottery Barn version.
Yeah. What's the plan for Film Movement?
Film Movement Plus. So yeah, these just a handful of the many titles that they have, and you guys, as listeners to this program, can dig in because you get a 30-day free trial and 50% off your first 3 paid months. All you have to do is use the promo code KNIFE at checkout when you go to filmmovementplus.com. That's KNIFE.
Next one up.
Mm-hmm.
Supernova.
Yes.
It is impossible for me to look at the title of this film and not think about Kylie Minogue's disco album. There is a song on there called Supernova, and it is a all-time jam.
I keep thinking about...
Just so everyone knows.
I keep thinking about Frankie Goes to Hollywood's Welcome to the Pleasure Dome.
And this film could not be more different than what we have just discussed.
Oh, yeah, no, not really.
Regarding those two songs.
Yes.
It's from Harry McQueen. He is an actor and director, British actor, director. He made a film in 2014 called Hinterland.
British or Australian?
That I did not see. He's British.
Okay.
This one is about a couple played by Stanley Tucci and Colin Firth. And they've been together, you know, decades.
Yeah.
And Colin Firth is a concert pianist of some renown, it would appear.
Yes.
Because at the beginning of the film, there's a discussion of an autograph for a waitress. We don't know how well-known he is, but...
You know. There's discussion that he hasn't performed in a long time.
Yes. So what we learn very quickly is that Stanley Tucci has some form of dementia.
Yes.
Now, I went to look this up because they're very nonspecific in the film. And it has always been a thing that I didn't quite know. But now I do. Dementia is a general term for the decline in mental ability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alzheimer's is the most common cause of dementia. Alzheimer's is a specific disease.
Mm-hmm. Dementia is a symptom.
Dementia is a group of symptoms.
I see.
So about 60 to 80% of all dementia cases are caused by Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
Alzheimer's is a type of dementia. It is the cause of dementia.
Gotcha.
We don't know what is going on with Stanley Tucci other than that he has encroaching dementia. They are on a holiday. They are traveling through the countryside, visiting family and friends. They are leading to a performance from Colin Firth. Like, that's the end point of their holiday, is
right.
He's going to perform again for, you know, the first time in a while. But over the course of the film, you know, they're in their... They're in their camper van, and apparently their home is, I guess, in London.
Yeah.
But they're traveling. And they're talking back and forth about what is coming next for Stanley Tucci's character. He's still pretty, you know...
lucid.
Lucid, and he knows, you know, what's going on. And he wants to make decisions for himself. Colin Firth does not want to have these conversations.
Yeah.
Colin Firth just wants to take care of him and not have to think about it, and is telling Stanley Tucci, look, no matter what happens, I'm taking care of you. Nothing bad is going to happen to you. I'm taking care of you. Can we just not talk about it?
Yeah. Colin Firth hasn't performed in a while because he has pretty much devoted himself full time to the taking care of Tucci, who is a novelist.
Yes, who... has stopped working on his book because he can't work anymore. He can't focus on the book. This should be, you know,
wrenching.
Or maybe it shouldn't be. I don't really know. What I do know is this. This is a very quiet, tasteful film about tasteful people in lovely spaces.
Lovely sweaters.
And the performances are good from Tucci and Firth. You feel the love that these characters have for each other. They're a longtime couple. They're inseparable. They they go well together, and they don't have, you know, the usual trouble that you see in an independent film about a married couple of, you know, three decades.
Right.
It's not, what was that film, 45 years?
Yes. Whoa.
They're happy together.
Yeah.
And yet there is this impending medical problem.
Right.
But the film is so boxed into its sense of peace and quiet and comfort that not only do you not really see Tucci experiencing that many symptoms,
only every so often,
but they are the gentlest of symptoms. They are, you know, oh, I wandered off to pet a dog, but here I am. I'm only 25 feet away. I was found in 10 seconds.
It's fine.
Everything's going to be okay. There's a warm bath quality to this that doesn't allow for much in the way of the fear that both of them must be experiencing.
Yeah.
And
this is a film that brings up heavy, scary, you know, complicated issues.
Yes.
And then just skitters across the surface of all
it,
of them.
It wants to hug it out.
Yeah.
So while I found it, you know, soothing, I don't feel like I should have been soothed.
Yeah, it is a cozy movie about an uncozy subject, yeah. And not because there's some grander aesthetic scheme at play to, like,
right,
take this uncomfortable thing and approach it in a way that's approachable. It just felt like they didn't really want to approach the uncomfortable parts, and so they just kind of hung back as much as they could.
I'm thinking about Sarah Polley's film.
I thought about that a lot.
Away From Her is, yes, what it's called. Came out in 2000-something.
Early, yeah.
Julie Christie and...
Gordon...
That Canadian actor whose name I can't even remember. I'm very sorry.
He's very good.
Sorry, Canada. That's a wrenching film.
Uh-huh.
In that film, Julie Christie receives an Alzheimer's diagnosis. And immediately she says to her husband, and they have a similar relationship to the kind that you see in this film. She says, I'm going to voluntarily enter an Alzheimer's facility so that you don't have to make a decision for me, because that will be too hard for you.
Yeah.
You won't want to do that. I'm going to do it now. I'm just going to go there. And you're going to let me do this. And he says, I don't want you to do this, but you're going to do what you want.
Right.
So, okay. And over the course of the film, her symptoms emerge. And heartbreaking stuff takes place. Won't spoil it. We've talked about this film. We've talked about Away From Her on this podcast more times than almost any other movie because it pings a very specific fear of yours.
Yes.
And that fear of yours is, if I can say it in the way that you always say it, I want to be able to make jokes. I want to be able to be, you know, clever. And when the day comes that I can't do that, Dave White, you are to make me some murder pudding. Feed it to me so that I die. You want the Kevorkian,
yes,
you know, final exit, humanely, your own decision. I understand that, and I have long ago promised, in whatever way I can,
and it's not just
when I'll get you the murder pudding.
And it's not just when I stop being clever. There's more to it than that. It's about being scared and confused all the time.
Right.
And we'll be talking about this even more next week when we talk about The Father.
Oh, boy.
We sure will. But end-of-life issues don't come up in The Father, but do come up in Supernova. And again, they barely want to, like, well, get their Wellingtons muddy.
It's very quiet. And I won't give away the ending
no.
of this. But there is a great remove mm-hmm. that is taking place. You know, it's as though, like you said, it's as though they're afraid to show you the ugliest stuff,
yeah.
the most frightening stuff, the stuff that makes people genuinely afraid when they receive this kind of diagnosis.
Yeah.
And so, as much as I admire Stanley Tucci and Colin Firth in these roles, because again, they're really good.
Yeah, yeah.
You should watch this for their performances. They are the old gay couple that you know hope you can be if you are older and gay. Otherwise, you don't want to be them.
I'm never getting you into an RV, so that
is correct. There's not going to be, we're not going to be like holidays in the recreational vehicle, no. But yeah, I wanted more. I wanted something that would stick with me.
I
don't know how much of this is going to stick with me.
When I heard what this was about, I was like,
oh, I know. I remember
I sort of girded my loins. I thought it was just going to be devastating. Right. And then I watched and I was like,
Yeah, that happened today when we watched The Father.
Yeah.
Again, we'll talk about that this week. That was an ordeal.
Yeah.
But,
in a good way.
I wanted there to be more real life stuff.
Yeah, and if you're not going to make me feel, at least make me think.
Yeah. I found myself liking the furniture.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
And I, you know, granted, I'm always looking at the furniture.
Sure.
But, you know, this is a very posh.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the NHS is going to take care of us kind of situation. And I, you know, that's enviable, I guess.
Yeah.
I wanted more.
For sure. And then there's French Exit.
Which is a weird, weird, weird little movie.
It is, and I never quite knew where it was going to go, and that was exciting.
And it's the kind of film that is getting, it's getting Barb and Star reviews.
Oh, I can see that,
because you either are into
on board.
You're either into the weirdness and the fantastical elements that take place,
yeah,
or you are like, why is this going on?
Yeah.
Why is this happening? Why is the candle talking? Like, it shouldn't, you know, if you start a film that's sort of based in reality and then you go whoosh out the window, here comes everything crazy.
Why is everyone staying in the same apartment when some of these people have their own apartments
their own
in
homes,
this city?
Yeah.
Yes.
It stars, well, it's from Azazel Jacobs,
yes.
who made The Lovers and Terry.
And Mama's Man.
And it's based on a book by Patrick DeWitt. He adapted the screenplay. It stars Michelle Pfeiffer and Lucas Hedges as a mother and son who are rich.
Yes.
Really, 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 really rich.
Manhattan rich.
And who then realize that they are broke. Really, 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 really broke. Because Michelle Pfeiffer's understanding of money is
nebulous at best.
No understanding of money at all. So she just spends it and doesn't think that it's ever going to run out. It runs out. They sell everything. They sell all the furniture and the art and the, you know, all the things that I have.
The townhouse.
Valuable, the townhouse. And they go to Paris.
For her friend has an apartment that she's
her sister.
Friend, as it turns out.
Oh, that's not her sister?
I thought it was her sister, too, and Christy insisted it was friend.
Okay.
So one of us is wrong.
Anyway, they have a place to go.
Yes.
Rich people always have a safety net.
Yeah, they do.
And so they go to Paris with stacks of cash that Michelle Pfeiffer puts on a closet shelf and then just takes little bundled up wads of $100 bills.
100 euro bills.
As she 100 euro bills as she needs them.
Yeah.
Which is much too fast.
Yes.
She doesn't know how much things cost, so she just gives people 100 euro notes and says, I don't know. And meanwhile, Lucas Hedges, her adult son.
Yes. But who she took out of school when he was like 12.
Right. For no reason other than I don't like this place and yeah. they're not treating you like the little prince that you are. Yeah. So he happily maybe goes to Paris along with her.
Well, he's just been dumped by his fiance.
Sort of.
Well, he has a fiance.
He tells her we're moving to Paris tomorrow. And she says, well, I guess we're breaking up then.
Yeah.
This is Imogen Poots.
Yes.
And the what happens next is that they and their pet cat, they have a black cat.
That she sneaks into France.
She sneaks into France and they go to Paris. They stay in this apartment.
Now on the cruise ship to France.
Yes.
Lucas Hedges meets a fake psychic,
right?
Played by Danielle McDonald, who turns out to maybe be a real psychic.
She's a real psychic.
Yes, but she
sets. They call her the witch.
Yes,
yeah.
But she sets herself up on the boat to like tell fortunes and like she basically tells a woman that she dies and she's going to die and gets in trouble for it. But the woman dies anyway. But she's still in trouble.
Right.
And so she spends the rest of the cruise in the brig or whatever. But then. He spends the night with her and then she has to be found later on because the cat runs away.
The cat figures into this story in a way that I'm not going to talk about.
Yes.
Because it is, well, this is the part that becomes
fantastical.
Utterly fantastical.
They meet another American expat played by Valerie Mahaffey.
Yes.
Who is brilliant in this. And I found out got a Spirit Award nomination for this.
Good for her. Delighted. She deserved it. Yeah.
She's hysterical. She's this woman who doesn't know them at all, but like has always kind of admired the Michelle Pfeiffer character from afar because she was this like, you know, sort of blazing socialite back in the day and basically like offers friendship to them and they don't know anybody else in town. So they just start hanging out.
More and more people begin hanging out in the apartment.
Yes.
Which, again, you don't need to know right now. Just watch it.
One of them being Isaac de Bancole.
Here's the one thing I will tell you. Tracy Letts is in this film as a corpse and a talking candle.
Yes.
That's all I'm going to tell you. Because if I tried to explain...
Yeah.
You would say, well, this sounds idiotic and I'm not watching it. But
like Barb and Star, if you roll with it,
yeah.
the rewards are plenty.
It exists in its own little strange world.
Yeah. It's a screwball drama.
If Whit Stillman...
Mm-hmm. I'm listening.
And Wes Anderson... made a supernatural...
Did Blithe Spirits.
Yeah.
Kind of. That's as good a précis as any.
I know there are a lot of people out there who are hating this film.
Yeah.
Well, for calling it precious, calling it, you know, self-consciously quirky.
Twee.
I was into it.
I dug it. I liked... It's twists and turns. I like movies that make me laugh and I'm not even quite sure what I'm laughing at or just that I'm just laughing at the very direction that things are going.
And Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, man.
Has entered a part of her career. Like Mother and this to me are signaling this direction for Michelle Pfeiffer to go into. Where she's playing these like eccentric older women.
Yeah.
And
in a very committed way.
She gives, yeah. She fully commits. And I knew I liked this movie the moment when Lucas Hedges turns to her after she has been cruel to Valerie Mahaffey. And he says, "You're being a dick." And she looks at him and says, "How awful." And gets up and walks away. And I thought, oh, God, yeah.
it's an extraordinary performance. Yeah, Pfeiffer's great. Valerie Mahaffey is wonderful. Lucas Hedges is fine. It's
his job is to be deadpan.
Exactly.
The
he's
film,
there so to react to everybody else.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is it's worth seeking out.
I really dug its strangeness.
Yeah, and its oddball vibe,
silliness. It's also about something real. After you get under that, it's
there is tragedy under all.
Very much like, I think, very much like Nomadland. I think of it as a film about
grief,
an older person experiencing grief who doesn't know what happens next. And who then decides she just doesn't care what happens next.
And these are the people who would eat the food that was in that crate.
Absolutely. In fact, at one point in the film, she goes to a fancy little supermarket and drops like 1,200 euros on the most expensive everything that she can find just because she has no understanding
at that point in the film, she's consciously sort of trying to burn through the money for various reasons.
Yeah. But up until that point, she just had no understanding of the value of money.
Sure.
It all just sort of landed in her lap. And she thinks the only way to find out what's on the other side of that is to rid herself of it.
Yeah. So Supernova has an RV, and this movie has grief. And so everything ties to Nomad.
All three of these films tie together in an odd way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go figure. We have some letters.
We do.
First...
Yes.
We have a Patreon.
Yes, we do that as well.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Starting for as little as a dollar a month, you get daily recommendations from one of us. And then you also get a show called...
That was me breathing on my glasses to wipe the smudge.
To read those letters.
Oh, I'm sorry if you were hearing the in the back.
And our breathing exercises.
That's right.
We do also at $1 you get Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, a show we do a few times a month where we do 20-30 minutes on one title in specific. And then above that, you get all kinds of extra stuff. LKTV, a podcast of the television. Linoleum Knife and Fork, a podcast of the food. Linoleum Nights, where we talk about any number of topics and we curse, which we don't do on the other shows.
So many bad swears.
Club meetings where we get together online and watch a movie together on Discord. All kinds of cool stuff. So please check it out. Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
This letter is from Human.
Yes.
Hi, Alonzo and Dave. I'm the guy who posted the Guardian comment you mentioned in this episode.
Ah.
And I just wanted to say thank you again for everything you do. These are dark days. And so much of what we do and create seems to be in a vacuum. I'm an academic, and I have more teaching this term than I have ever had before, but all of it is on Zoom. Whoa. So in a way, I've never met, will never meet, my students, and they will not meet each other. I guess this is my way of saying that I hope you both know that you are not broadcasting into a void, and that while we are all at a remove from one another, the warmth, kindness, and humor that resonates from both of you means so much to so many all over the world, including here in snowy...
Sverige.
That's in Sweden.
Yes.
Sorry that I did not pronounce the name of your
maybe
city.
I didn't either. I don't know. Maybe
we both screwed it up.
Well, thank you, Human, and thank you for leaving that comment on the Guardian piece. That was very sweet. We appreciated it very much.
It was. Douglas, our handsome sound engineer.
Yes. Although anything that's wrong with the sound is our fault and not his.
Here's what I would like to know, speaking of Douglas and the help that he gave us last week with our sound. People have been telling us lately that we sound very quiet and soft and they have to turn the volume all the way up.
Yes.
So please let us know if that has been changed.
Did we fix that or did we not fix that?
Because that's kind of where we're at. We want to know.
Yeah.
Douglas says, the whole thing about the Antichrist. Now, where did we talk about the Antichrist?
We were talking about faith-based movies or authoritarian
movies. Christian films?
Yes.
That might have been where we talked about
it. I believe so.
But anyway, it had to do with Trump.
Yes.
He says, the whole thing about the Antichrist is that it is actually Nero.
Oh.
Yep. The whole issue with the Book of Revelation, please note that it is singular, not plural. I'll tell you what, though, when I was a kid... Preacher would be like, turn to Revelations, like it was always
with an S.
I grew up in the South with some Baptists, so he says the whole thing with the Book of Revelation is that it was a coded message to Christians during that period. Yes, that is absolutely correct. Nero was doing some pretty wild stuff in the killing of Christians, so it was an apocalyptic text. The Greek word means to reveal, which was a style of writing back then. So yes, Trump is the Antichrist, because he is a perfect historical reflection of Nero. This goes back to my earlier question about the evangelical films. If you did not know, I have a master's in religion, but that is a long story.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Indeed it is.
That's the thing about Revelation being about Nero is something that they do not teach you when you are young and growing up in the South in Baptist churches.
Instead, they give you a copy of the Left Behind series.
They talk about late great planet Earth and prophecies and stuff
Yikes.
Like that. That's right.
Ay, ay, ay.
All that, all the funnest stuff in the Bible.
All right, folks. Well, hey, that's our time. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Please check out our friends on the internet. Go see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Check out Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys of the Movies, Criterion Cast, Secretly Timid, The Workroom, and Big Fat Gay Podcast. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts, and if you leave us a 5-star review, not only will we be super grateful, but we'll read it on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify and Google Play, Amazon Music, CastBox, Podbean, etc. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. Check out what he's up to lately on his Twitter, at Blutopia, BLEUTOPIA. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at LinoleumCast. And, of course, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Have a good week, everybody. Take care of yourselves and each other. And until next time,
goodbye.